It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
There's a lot I'm thinking about bringing up to Sal. Bulldog has left, by the way, Sal.
I've been told that.
Okay.
I could tell he was struggling a little bit earlier in the show.
Yeah. If by earlier in the show you mean like for the last 5 days, I would be like nodding my head. I kind of want to ask you about Golden State.
I wouldn't know much about them.
Okay.
Than, you know, who their players are.
Okay. You're not following the story the last couple days?
Was there a fight between Durant and
Draymond Green? Yeah.
I did hear about that. I'm not sure what the deal was there, though.
They suspended Green. He turned the ball over at the end of the game. And then I think it's been building. Which is maybe putting it mildly, and then they got after each other after that game. They lost that game in overtime to the Clippers, I think. And then the team suspended Green, and other players on the team have been confronting him. And you have Iguodala on the team saying, everything comes to an end. And Durant being sort of teed up questions about how it'll all work itself out. And he never said he agreed with that. Just, we'll see, that kind of thing. Really interesting. I mean, There'd be a school of thought that this is the only thing that can defeat them.
Absolutely, that they would maybe implode themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. You could have, you know, goes back to the thing we talk about a lot. I mean, you could have infighting in the team, and if guys aren't, you know, doing what's expected of them to be a good teammate and help each other succeed for a cause, and they're all kind of selfish and doing their own thing, and then they get mad at each other and, you know, it bleeds. I think it absolutely can affect how good a team can play on the court or on the ice or on the field.
I asked Nate Oates today in a podcast interview that is about to be put up on our website, Mike Schopen Conversation. It would be with Nate Oates, the UB coach, about this, and asked him if it's important to you or vital to you that the players all like each other. And he kind of said what you did, you know, partly, that it's preferable, but it's not really about like. You know, the UB guys all live kind of in the same place. They live in a building where, like, everybody's sort of a door. Like, the whole team is kind of in the same spot to try to foster that sort of camaraderie and friendship.
That's right. You don't have to love each other. I think that what gets lost in our culture conversations and things like that that we've had and debates that we have with other people and social media or whatever is it seems that some people think that's what it means. You have to have kumbaya, everybody's got to love each other. That doesn't mean that. I do think it means that you need to have people pulling together, working towards a common goal. And when you have enough people or the right people not doing that, doesn't have to be a certain amount, doesn't have to be, you know, there's no defining characteristic of who that might be. But I think it's got to be if you have the wrong people pulling the wrong way, which is, in this case, two of the better players, obviously, in a really good team, that can really fracture a team and tear it apart. Or if you have enough people and you have, you know, fragments of teams, I think that can tear it apart. So they don't have to love each other. Not everybody does. There's a locker room of 53 guys in a football team, and I can guarantee you that every single year in every locker room, there's certain guys that don't get along. But at the end of the day, as long as you're hopefully pulling in the right direction and trying to help each other succeed, and even if you have a few that aren't, it can't be too many of them, it can't be the wrong people.
So I don't think we've talked since Sunday. Am I right?
I don't think so. I think you're right, yes.
All right. So I really like the conversation we've had in here about Barkley and Josh Allen. I think it's interesting that Sean McDermott, and I'll say a little bit surprising to me, that McDermott on Monday was ready with Josh Allen's our quarterback when healthy. I'd say mostly I'd be impressed with that, but I expected it to drag out a little bit, maybe be a little bit more, I guess, mysterious. And I really like the discussion around Barkley and how players like him, I think, can very often get lost in the wash in the league. And I understand perfectly why the Bills would want to get right back to Josh Allen. And I, for the most part, support it. But, man, it's tough to make it if you are not somebody who was drafted high and you are not somebody that was sort of like special to the coach and or GM that brought you into a team.
So are you basically asking why the Bills would here in this situation and wondering?
I'm not confused by any of it. I think there's a reasonable chance that Matt Barkley can be a good player. I think that there's a decent chance of that. I don't think it's necessarily likely, but when you look at his career, when I've looked at his career, his draft stock plummeted in his senior year. He is a mid-round pick with Philadelphia, which is about to undergo a regime change. Then he goes to Chicago, and the same thing happens. He puts some stats up for Chicago, good and bad, and the same thing happens. And by now, if not earlier, you know, he's nobody's our guy, the way that that term is used to describe players like Josh Allen. So, you know, who is going to hang in there with Matt Barkley?
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, look, his we talk a lot about Nathan Peterman's interception ratio. Well, I mean, Matt Barkley has quite a high one, too. He's thrown a total in his career of 291 passes, and he has 18 interceptions. That includes not throwing one last week. So going into the game, you know, he had less passes, obviously, 18 interceptions. That's a lot. He only threw 8 touchdowns versus those 18 going into last week. So he has not been that good when he's been on the field. But I think he has more of a pedigree, certainly to give him an opportunity that maybe he hasn't had or it hasn't been in the right situation. But, you know, going back to what you guys talked about earlier, I heard the conversation about, you know, does Sean McDermott maybe actually think that Josh Allen could give them the best chance to win? I think he might. I don't know. I even after the game that Barkley put up, maybe they've seen enough of Josh Allen to say, yeah, look, you know, Barkley played well, but we think Josh Allen can do enough things to give us a better chance to win because of certain things he can do in the playbook. So I'm not so sure, you know, if it's just about that now, or if it's simply about, we got to get this kid on the field. It's probably a little mix of both. I don't think they would put him out there, Mike, if they felt, yeah, we got no chance, but we got to let him play. I think it has to be, we still have a chance to win, and we got to let him play.
To me, the idea that Allen gives them a better chance to win against the next team, whoever it would be, is reasonable. Like, I would never question, if McDermott said that, I would not question that, you know?
That's right.
Like, Allen was on the field when they beat Minnesota. He was on the field when they beat Tennessee. McDermott has pointed out how he thought he was doing good things against Houston before he got hurt, and that was a close game. So,
and, Mike, they have now retooled kind of the roster here to, I think, I was thinking about this today, like, you know, you think about the difference in the wide receiver core now and what they kind of had for most of the year, at least going in. It seems like they're kind of catering to maybe what they want to do with Josh Allen, putting more speed on the field, you know, with Deontay Thompson coming in now and Isaiah McKenzie being brought in and Robert Foster, who was on the team, but then he wasn't, you know, giving him more playing time and, you know, what he did on Sunday and seeing what he can do maybe and feeling that he's in the right spot now. So I think it looks to me like they're not only saying, okay, like, A, we think Josh can give us a chance. Whether that's the best chance or not, I don't know, but it's close, obviously, they would think. B, he needs the reps. And C, we're going to design and put around the talent that caters to his strengths to see what we got here.
And I'm fine with all this. I actually like it. I mean, I think this is what losing teams with losing records should do in sports, exactly what they're doing, bringing in new players and being willing to shuffle out guys that are not in the future plans. It makes me wonder what Terrell Pryor was meant for originally.
I think it was for that, but he just hasn't shown, you know, what he is able to do. He hasn't shown anything. You know, I mean, he's kind of flamed out here in 2 weeks. You know, he didn't have much of an opportunity the first game, but then last week goes against his former team. I don't know. I think there were a couple balls I thought maybe could have been better, or maybe he could get to, but he didn't. He didn't have any catches, I think, in 3 targets. And again, I'll go back to, we don't know what happens behind the scenes. Is he not doing the right things in practice or in the meeting room? For a guy to bounce around the league as much as he has with the talent that he has, I mean, at least does raise some red flags to me.
Mm-hmm. Sal Capaccio on the West Hur hotline. Did you see, Sal, that there were 2 more flex games today?
I did.
It's very exciting.
Chargers-Steelers is a good one. Yeah, I like that.
As much as you and I like trying to guess the schedule for primetime games, it's too bad we haven't been able to work these into our conversations.
I know, right? they seem a little bit it's a little tough to do though, Mike. But there's so many rules about flex scheduling and when they can do it and what games they can do it and how this all works and things like that. There's certain games they can flex or certain games they can't. So it's hard to do. It's hard to talk about. But I like the moves they made today. With the, like I said, and the second one was Rams and who was it?
Bears.
Vikings? Bears. Rams and Bears. That's interesting as well. But look, I threw dirt on the Steelers a few weeks ago. And I was wrong. I should not have done that. They are playing really good football now. Their defense is starting to really, if not play well, at least keep them in games because their offense is so good and so dynamic. But, you know, I should have known better because here is this team again that every year, like the Patriots, it seems like there's some issue early on with them where we talk about how, this could be it. Could be the closing of the window. And then suddenly here they are 6-2-1.
Mm-hmm. Sal, I was planning on doing this with Bulldog here, and he has left, but let's look at our bets. Let's weigh in on these bets at this point. Yeah. We have six bets. Not you are not involved in all of them. The two that you and I have are the first two. New England over. I have over. You have under. 10.5 wins. And so they are 7-3, which, of course, they have a chance at that, but they are coming off a pretty bad-looking performance. And Tom Brady is getting heat. So 7-3, they have both of their Jet games left, one Buffalo game, one Miami game, Minnesota and Pittsburgh. Am I the favorite? They need to go 4-2.
Yeah, you're the favorite. I can't see. The only games they have a chance at this point of really losing, realistically, would be Minnesota and Pittsburgh. Miami has traditionally given Brady and them trouble at their place. I mean, that's a game that's always kind of been weird for them. So you never know. But I think as of right now, I can't see how they don't go at least 4-2, if not 5-1.
Okay, that's good for me. Miami has 5 wins now, and they have 2 Bills games. The order is at Indianapolis after the bye, Buffalo, New England at home, at Minnesota, Jacksonville, and at the Bills. And so if Miami wins 2 more, that's a push. 3 more, I take it. Are you hoping for a push?
No, I think they could win 1 game.
All right.
I'm hoping still to win this bet. It's more likely than not, I think, of a push than anything. If I look at this, I think 2 wins is where they max out. I don't even see them getting to 3 wins with their remaining schedule. 3 more wins.
Would you like to double that bet?
No, because I'm in a bad spot right now, I think, okay, with how many wins they have.
All right. Maybe we can think of a new one. We have – I'm always – you don't know this about me. I'm up
for that. What do you like about that right now? You like where you are, right?
Sure. I mean –
how many wins do you think they have left on their schedule?
Well, how many games of those 6 games will they be favored in? I'm calling their schedule back up. They will not be favored at Indianapolis. They probably will be favored at home against Buffalo. Not New England. Not at Minnesota. Probably not, but who knows by then.
Right.
Jacksonville. Is there some slim chance that if Jacksonville blows up this week against Pittsburgh that the Bills are favored against Jacksonville?
I thought about this, Mike. I do think there's a slim chance. Right now, they both have 3 wins. You would be talking about a 3-win team at a 3-win team and a team in Jacksonville that has been just brutally bad lately if they lose another one coming up.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely, but could happen. Like if Bortles gets benched here or something in this Steeler game, I think the Dolphins, the likeliest total is 2, and I think Tannehill's back after the bye. Maybe we'll see. I think that's a big difference.
I don't know doing there. Okay. It seems like they're playing games there for some reason. I can't. Are they like just kind of thinking that they need to move on and they want to figure out what's going on? Are they going to put him back in the lineup? I'm not really sure here.
I think they will. I think they didn't appreciate how injured he was when they kept him practicing, and then he suddenly couldn't play because he was hurt. Tennessee, Joe and I have a bet. I have Tennessee to finish top 2 in their division. Right now that division is Houston 6-3, Tennessee 5-4, Indy 4-5, Jacksonville 3-6. Who's the favorite?
Oh, boy. All right, I got to look at schedules now. So Tennessee, how many of these games they play each other? Indy, they play Houston, they play Indy again. So Indy and Tennessee play each other twice.
All right, that's a split probably.
Probably. Tennessee has to go to Houston.
Loss.
Yeah, I think
maybe
Houston wins
those.
That.
All those teams are the same.
Indy
all
also really goes close to Houston.
Yeah, all right. All those teams are really close.
I agree. So what is the bet? Tell me the bet again.
Top 2 in the division.
For Tennessee?
Yep.
Yeah, you'll get that, I think. I don't know how it shakes out, but I think Tennessee stays in the number 2 spot, and maybe even they get to number 1. I doubt it. I don't think they're going to fall behind both Houston and Indy.
All right. I have a bet with John Clayton, and the winner gets dessert. That the Bills and Seahawks will combine, my side of it is, combine for fewer than 11 wins. 10.5, actually. So if it's 11, he wins the bet. 10, I win. The Bills have 3 wins, and Seattle has 4. Seattle has done better than I expected.
Me too. They're 4-5. And
2 close losses to L.A. in there.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to look at their schedule coming up. The Bill, I think, Mike, I'm not positive. I think the Bills have the quote-unquote easiest schedule remaining.
Yep.
In the NFL based on win-loss record of opponent, right?
Yeah, Bills going 3-3 would not be that surprising, I think, at this point. I mean,
so
I think
you're in
good.
A good spot here.
No, I think I'm going to lose that because I have to have 10 wins combined or fewer.
Oh, you have the under.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think the over wins this.
I don't think John Clayton bets against the Seahawks.
No, probably not.
I have a bet with Bulldog that the Seahawks will win fewer than 6 games, and I'm probably an underdog there. And then Washington to make the playoffs. I have yes, Bulldog has no. I saw a line today at Bovada, -250 on the Redskins. NFC East, Washington 6-3. Dallas and Philly now both 4-5. New York 2-7.
Well, that division just isn't very good right now. I mean, I'm saying that even though it's, I guess, going into the year, or maybe, people just thought it was the best just by perception in some way. It isn't. Those teams are not that good. Philadelphia is not that good right now. Dallas is not that good. And Washington is disappointing me the last couple of weeks because I suddenly jumped on the Washington train and said, hey, this is a team that can play. And then they go to Tampa and they
won,
play an
but
egg,
they,
right?
they
didn't play well. That's right.
They gave up 500 yards. They got beat badly by Atlanta.
Atlanta, that was it. I'm sorry, Atlanta.
Yep.
And I'm surprised too. I think Washington still, to me, is the favorite to win that division. They have a 1.5 game lead.
Yeah, I mean, 2.
They have a 2 game lead.
2 game lead, right. Have they played Dallas yet? Maybe not. Washington and Dallas, have they played yet? Maybe not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think Washington won that game. I think they played.
At Washington,
they just played a couple weeks ago. Redskins won 20-17. Oh, yeah, I remember they hit the upright or missed a field goal with the Cowboys.
Yeah, night game. That's right.
No, it was like a
4 o'clock game. 4 o'clock game.
Yeah, 20-17 Redskins over the...
Yep. Mm-hmm. Dallas was kicking to force overtime, and they had a penalty and didn't do it. All right, good. Sal, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sal Capaccio, there he is, our friend. Hard worker, good husband, all-around fine person. So Sports Illustrated did what here? Sports Illustrated put out Jay Peterman, John O'Hurley from Seinfeld, talking about Nathan Peterman?
Yeah, pretty much.
He did
a soliloquy.
Let's hear it.
A treasure and a disaster all rolled into one. Nathan Peterman taught us that there is joy in failure. Now, one might have thought that an NFL record 5 interceptions in a starting debut all in the first half was a folly that could not be outdone. But they did not know our dear Nathan, however. Young Peterman continued to excel in his ineptitude, brandishing an all-time low passer rating and remarkably reaching double-digit interceptions in under 100 attempts, with a sum of picks 4 times greater than his touchdown count, and all the while managing to throw just as many TDs to the other team as he did his own. Oh, such a giving soul, that Nathan. A true enigma, a beacon of light in his plight, a delight. The flaming table for which Bills fans yearned. Oh, there is only one Nathan Peterman. Good night, sweet prince.
And you can actually see him read this.
Yeah, he's in a director's chair or something, doing it.
Wonder whose idea?
Sports Illustrated's.
We think it was their idea?
Yeah, probably.
To look up John O'Hurley and see if he was up for this?
Wait, what's the alternative? John O'Hurley thought about doing
totally
this himself?
Totally possible. Yes.
And then reached out to Sports Illustrated?
Reached out to everybody. Would you guys let me do that, please? How much? How much would you give me?
Okay, maybe I could see that. He did a Bison's appearance a couple years ago.
He would do that. Do you see him getting paid here? I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Right?
How much? $3,000.
I don't feel like I have a good gauge. Sure, $3,000. $3,000 sounds.
Does Sports Illustrated have $3,000?
No, yeah, wait, never mind. $300.
$200.
Couple hundred bucks.
$50.
Lunch.
I'm down to $50, and Joe is down to lunch. Is Tom Brady bad now? Is Matt Barkley actually good? Opinions on these questions and more from Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report after this. Mike Shope and the Bulldog, this is WGR.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Okay, the age-old football question is being asked again. No, that's not who wins between the immovable force and the irresistible defense. That's what's worse, jelly beans flung from a spoon across the cafeteria or overcooked fettuccine when these phrases are used to describe your passes? For that, we ask the man who came up with these lines, Mike Tenier from Bleacher Report. Mike and Chris here. Thanks for your time.
Hey, I think you left out a slingshot made out of old hair scrunchies, which was another metaphor I used. Unfortunately, on one of the Bills' quarterbacks, but it has been that kind of year.
I was really fond of that. In fact, as I stepped out during the break, just preceding you coming on with us, Mike, and asked our producer, like, I read this thing earlier today, and he had just tweeted it out on our station account in advance of you coming on, and I said, what's the line about Barkley? And that's it, a slingshot made out of hair scrunchies. Like, that is descriptive. Like, I can see this device, and I like it.
You can see he's getting kicked out of Sunday school for using something like that.
Right.
You know, Barkley did what he had to do, certainly, last week. But I've been watching Barkley a long time. I'm based out of Philadelphia. I saw him for, you know, two off seasons and preseasons and starting a couple games here in Philadelphia. So they're a ticking clock for when that kind of throw it downfield and let her rip and let it all hang out starts turning from touchdowns against a bad opponent like the Jets into another set of interceptions for you. So you have a very limited shelf life. Hopefully Josh Allen will be back in the course of that.
And Bulldog here has a beard that could use scrunchies. Like, you could
I could tie some scrunchies to this thing, yes.
Make that work. Well, you know, I think we'd all agree, like, Allen throwing the ball would not be described in this way. But
no.
when he played, it didn't always go to the right place. And I'm curious about Barkley. Like, I'm not going to argue with you about how his passes look, but
right.
one thing that I'm thinking about with him is he was never anybody's guy. Like, he was never a player like Allen is here, like lots of guys are, who, because of when they're drafted, that you are going to put them out there and see what that is. And Barkley was on two other teams that really he didn't rank, and then they changed coaches and he was out. So for this thing here, like, I'm certain that Allen will go back in, but I'm curious about Barkley, and he put a game up that I think will have fans will refer to it if Allen doesn't, you know, get it together when he comes back.
Fans will refer to it, and, you know, Barkley had the chance to be that guy. I believe it was his coming out his junior year. He was supposed to be a consensus number one pick. He was supposed to be where Sam Darnold was his junior year at USC. And so, you know, he kind of has a very weak senior season. He winds up being a mid-round pick, which a lot of USC quarterbacks kind of wind up in that place. And in Philadelphia, you know, he had a handful of opportunities and really didn't shine in them in any way. And again, that also goes back to preseason opportunities and things like that. So, yeah, he gets the coaching change here. You really look at the Bears, and I guess you're right in that John Fox was on his way out, et cetera, et cetera. It was a pretty extended period of time. It was an extended airing out there. So I don't know. It's a chicken or egg thing. Like, why hasn't this guy ever had the full chance? Well, there have been several opportunities to have worked himself into that conversation. He's failed. And then, again, he has this game last week. I think credit to the coaching staff for not going complete turtle on the offense, because it was getting a little carried away with, you know, handoff on first down, handoff on second down, and maybe punt on third down. That's almost what it was looking like for a while. They didn't do that. They gave him some opportunities. you saw the caliber of opponent you were up against. That was a team that really didn't want to be there, I think. And it'll be different when you face better defenses down the ride. And I think you guys have a goal, and that is to get your young quarterback ready, get him to at least be in a position when he comes back to maybe make the leap forward guys like Mitchell Trubisky have made their second season.
Yeah, I sure hope that they maybe use the same. I mean, I know a game plan is going to be dependent on who you're playing and where you think the weaknesses are and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'd like to see Allen throw the ball down the sideline to Robert Foster a few times. And he did do that. Foster's been in and out here, practice squad, roster, cut, practice squad, back on the roster, mm-hmm. and now makes some plays and ends up with 100 yards against the Jets. But, yeah, I want to see Allen get kind of an airing out a little bit and have a downfield element to their passing game, because that's why they drafted him.
Yeah, launch the ball. And you're right. We saw him launch the ball sometimes, and again, it was often, landed in the stands or whatever. But nothing ventured, nothing gained. If all you're going to do is hand off up the middle for like a gain of a yard over and over again, you might as well fire some of them downfield. If they are overthrows, they're not going to be interceptions because they're going to go so far. And he's shown he can complete them. And he's also shown he ran the ball relatively well. And I don't think you want to do a lot of that because, again, you could risk injury. That's not what his future is. But do some things to create success. I think that's one of the things that, very conservative coaches lose track of the idea, create some success for this young man and then, backfill on the other side of things, like some of the more technical stuff. Create some highlights, create some puzzles, let him get opportunities that he feels good about himself, that some of these young players like Foster feel like they're with the program, and then backfill the program. And I think that's the goal. I think they probably should have maybe tried to do a little more with that with Peterman as well. I don't know what it would have amounted to, but it was nice to see them at least thinking in that direction when they put Barkley out there.
Mm-hmm. Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report. One reason we called you today, Mike, was to talk about, as a part of that same article, your comments about Tom Brady. That's the other line I mentioned, overcooked fettuccine. I think of people predicting the Patriots' demise like those moles in a whack-a-mole game. Like you stick your head up and you say, I think they're in decline, and then somebody whacks you. It's either someone else in the media or the Patriots themselves. They hit you and you go back down under. So you know the risks.
Yeah. We had that conversation. I was like DMing on Twitter with a couple of my colleagues, and it's like, I don't want to be the one who does it this time. So I guess I drew the short straw. I was the mole. It's like the weirdos in the cult, and like the end of the world is next week, and they have a cult, and they meet on a mountaintop, and then the world doesn't end, and the leader says, oh, I miscalculated, it's next year it's going to happen. And people stay in the cult. They always stay in the cult. But, this is different because we are Father Time is on the side of those of us who are concerned, let's say, about Tom Brady aging. You guys, Buffalo Bills fans, saw it a couple weeks ago, and I just re-looked up the game, and yeah, it was 9-6, and your defense kind of had control of the Patriots offense and had Brady uncomfortable, had him wondering where to throw, had him throwing off target for a big chunk of that game, and then you lose it in the fourth quarter for a couple of reasons. Part of it's your defense was probably on the field for like the 88 years or whatever, but this has been continuing. It started with that Bills game. I think it really was evident in the Packers game, which you can't see in the final score because Edelman threw a touchdown pass, et cetera. And now you saw that. And the other people are starting to put the statistics out. And I'll tell you right now, you post something like that and 6 million people with Tom Brady jerseys on Twitter as their avatar come after you, and they start saying things like, Tom Brady has not slipped at all. He's still ranked 9th in the NFL in this stat and 10th in the NFL in this stat. And I'm like, yeah, he's Tom Brady. He's 9th and 10th in the league in these things. That means it's obvious. You're mm-hmm. agreeing with me. He slipped mm-hmm. because he was 1, 2, and 3 for 20 years. And I think that's where we're at with that conversation.
Yeah, a lot of this is just watching him throw the ball, right? That's where the fettuccine thing comes in. And you reference in this piece Peyton Manning. And that was noticeable. Like watching the Bills were playing them that year, I remember. So I watched Manning. They were in primetime probably a couple times leading up to their game with the Bills. And I just remember saying on our show, like, the guy is not throwing it anymore. Like, he just can't. The ball is just wobbling. He's shot. And he got through it, but.
Yeah. It's not a tight spiral. It doesn't look like it leaves his hand right. The placement on the passes towards the outside are bad. You're relying more on the passes over the middle of the field, which are just physically shorter passes because of triangles and how that works. You're moving in the pocket becomes a little harder. You're getting sacks more easily. You're getting off-balance throws more easily. We saw him trip over his own feet on a trick play. all these little things add up. And, you know, for Manning, it started the previous year at the end, but it wasn't that big a deal. And then that year that they made it to the Super Bowl, it was crazy. But the fact is they made it to the Super Bowl, and that's where the Patriots can be this year. Obviously, they're still the Patriots. They got to win against the Bills. They got two more Jets games coming up, I think. They got more Dolphins games. They got you guys again. They're going to get into the playoffs, and they can find a way to win. But they can't, and I don't think anybody who's really watching, they can't just pretend, oh, it's the same old Brady, and he's going to beat you the same old way.
Who would you get? Who has a better chance to make the Super Bowl, the Patriots or the Steelers?
Oh, that's tough right now because the Steelers are firing on all cylinders. I will say this. If they meet face-to-face, it's going to be different. And I think they meet in two or 3 weeks. It's going to be different than it has been ever before because it's going to be Roethlisberger still has all of his weapons, can still do whatever he wants, still gets apparently injured in games and comes back a play later, and Brady doesn't. And I think that's the one where if that comes out way, I think it's going to be where it's going to be a pretty convincing Steelers win right now. Then all the people who are making fun of me right now are going to be out there saying, yep, this is it. This is the reality. Now, how do the Patriots survive? And that's what we're going to be.
Do you have any sense of whether the Patriots are being realistic about what Brady's condition is? Like, are they going to, do you think, alter things? Will that be the key to whether or not they can still have, you know, well, what is for them a successful year? 11 wins, 12 wins, go to the Super Bowl. Like, do you think that they'll change what they're asking him to do because of how he's throwing it right now?
I think there's been a little of that. If you really go back and look at the Titans game over again, I mean, they're going over the middle of the field constantly, and everything in the flat is designed with like a double screen or some kind of like misdirection or something like that to kind of hide the fact that all he's doing is trying to toss the ball to James White in space or Sony in space or somebody and make it work. So I think you're going to see more of that. You know, I say that, but then they ran that Philly special thing like they thought Brady was going to be able to turn up field and run for 25 yards. So there, it might be a little bit of a give and take there. I think the coaches understand. I think the question I have is, does Brady get it? Because this is a guy who does the Tom versus Time thing, and you know, does documentaries about himself, and like, what's this level of self knowledge there? Because ultimately, he's going to be the one who thinks he sees a guy 30 yards down the field along the sidelines and can fire it in there if that guy's open, and that's where the proof and the telling is whether that turns into an interception, an incomplete pass, or he still finds a way to get it there.
And it's been, I get the word I'm thinking of is difficult. There's a better one year for Gronkowski. I mean, he's done almost nothing, really. The first game, he had a good week the first week, and then it's just been injuries and more of that. What about him going forward? Like, watching him in the game here, I had some of the same feelings you're writing about having about Brady and what we're talking about. And I just wonder if this is it for him.
I feel that way. I think it was talked about all offseason. It's been mumbled about during the season. And it's a combination of somebody who feels his body breaking down and isn't, you know, Mr. 100% fit with the culture there, wondering why he's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy who could probably retire tomorrow and have cameos in Marvel movies and Fast and the Furious movies and have reality shows and play volleyball and do all these things. And he's got there and he's grueling. So I think we'll have to wait and see. But if you say at the end of the season, if we discover Rob Gronkowski wants out or wants to retire, it would not be shocking, I don't think, to anyone.
And we will continue our chat with Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report after this here on WGR. Mike Tenier from Bleacher Report. You're in Philly. Let's talk about the Eagles for a minute if you have time.
Ugh.
So I saw, must be tough. I saw a piece about the Eagles that agreed with my eye test about them, which I like when that happens. That one thing that is different is they're not getting big plays, and I was late to Carson Wentz because I saw a lot of misses. I'm like, are we sure? And then what would happen in games is he would just pull these plays out of his butt. The one in Washington last year and against Denver, and it's just like out of all the time. It was, wow, where did that come from? I didn't think there was any chance here, and there was a play, maybe a little bit like Favre used to do. And so that has, I think, decreased, and maybe with that, the Eagles, you know, their record is worse. So what do you see?
Yeah, there are a few more misses for guys who are open downfield and maybe one or two more odd decisions than we've seen in the past from Carson Wentz. And, you know, there's a couple things that you could point to. One, of course, is he had a very he had a limited offseason. He did throw the ball a lot in the offseason. That's part of it. But I look at the Eagles' offense overall, and I say, where are the big plays? And I say, some of those big plays appear to be in Indianapolis right now because I'll watch Colts footage, and I'll see Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles last year, running a lot of that stuff with Andrew Luck and with a bunch of guys you've never heard of and getting that success. And it's like, it's been a little bit of a brain drain there. And it's like, well, if Carson Wentz's mechanics aren't 100% ideal, where's the quarterback's coach? Quarterback's coach is in Minnesota. Offensive coordinator DeFilippo is in Minnesota right now. So I think Carson is maybe not at full capacity, but he doesn't have the coaching staff around him. The creativity isn't quite where it needs to be. And they've had some problems at running back, so you don't necessarily get some of the big plays you were getting from your running game as well. And when you put it all together, you have a week like you had last week. So I'll put a little bit on Carson, but I think if you look at his overall skill set, he's likely to bounce back. Put a lot of it on Doug Peterson right now. Didn't get the replacement voices in the game planning room and in the design of the offense room that he needed in the offseason, and you're seeing that in the offensive performance. And then we can spend probably an hour talking about the defense as well.
And, Ronald Darby out, former Bill, a lot of injuries.
Yep.
There is an ex-Eagles receiver, Jason Avant, who said he thinks Peterson is losing the team. Would you give that any credibility?
I don't know. Avant's been out of here a couple of years. Avant's a great guy. He's been out of here a couple of years. I don't know if he has a finger on the pulse of things.
Okay.
A lot of us who get in there, it looks like a unified team. It looks like a team that is going through the frustrations of losing, not the frustration of disbelief in the coach right now. And one of the things from a personnel standpoint, Peterson has a little bit of that player's coach mentality. He's got a little bit of that let the men be men mentality. That usually buys you a little more time with a locker room full of veterans where they're not going to be like, oh, this guy's making us run wind sprints after we lost. Who does he think he is? There's not that kind of thing there. I don't think he's losing the locker room. I think he's losing the situational battles, the fourth and one battles, and all that other stuff that he won routinely last year.
How about the NFC North? You think the Bears have it to get it home, or you think the Vikings, I don't know, the Packers are a couple games back. How do you see that division shaking out?
I think there's going to be at least one wild card out of there. I'm watching the Bears very carefully because they are improving. And the scouting report I had on them, you know, at the beginning of the year when Mitchell Trubisky would mix like one great play with two crazy ones has now switched to like three or four great plays to one crazy one, and that makes a huge difference. So they have what it takes. I'm looking at their schedule down the road, and I guess what it says, we got the Vikings against the Bears, and I believe that's on Sunday night.
Yep.
I want to see that game before I make a decision, and then they'll play again. Also see the Bears do have the Rams on the schedule down the line. So there are some tough things where I think we're going to figure out the Bears once and for all. But I think they can work their way out of it. But I'll give you a more definite after I see them head-to-head against the team they have to beat.
Mike, what is your number one takeaway on the Le'Veon Bell business?
Well, I was just reading that the other players – taken his name off the locker and have been distributing his stuff. They have been ganking his locker like it's a soldier in the medieval times. He's lying there. It's like, grab his armor. That's what they're doing. And I don't have an emotional stake whatsoever in him. You know, I want to see him play football. I want him to see what's best for his career. I don't think he made a very good football or financial decision this year by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe he made a noble decision or one that he felt he had to make, and good for him. But the fact that the team is treating his locker room like it's a goodie hut right now, they can all like take his cologne and stuff like that, gives an indication of how they feel about him. And I think that's telling, because when a team circles the wagons against you, that's something that I think you have to think about as you make your decisions.
To what extent do you see the Steelers as being vindicated in this? Like, are you on team running backs are replaceable? Maybe, it still has to be written how it goes for the Steelers here, whether that's a Connor injury or something. Like, what would you say about that?
Yeah, it's easy for the Steelers to feel vindicated. And I think in the short term, look at how we handled our business. Maybe they feel vindicated. They also have $14 million sitting that they could have used somewhere that they don't get to use, that they could have grabbed. Yeah, you know, I don't know, could have grabbed a pass rush or a nickel back that would have helped or something. So it's easy to feel vindicated. And I'm reminded of the of an old story. It goes back to the player strike in 87. Excuse me, the replacement player situation in 87. And the Cowboys played hardball against all the old Cowboys, against Tony Dorsett and those guys. And fans were booing all those guys. And Tex Schramm said, you know, you should never turn your fans against your players, because your players are the game. They're the team. They're the thing that matters. And I think the Steelers did do a little bit of that. I think the fans have turned against Le'Veon Bell. If they win a Super Bowl, all's forgiven. I don't think that's the best way to do business in the long term.
Very good. Mike Tenier, Sal Capaccio, our whole show at WGR550.com, on-demand audio, as always. Sneaky Joe is next, and then Niagara basketball. Niagara at Loyola of Illinois. See you tomorrow. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Tomorrow starts the same old